Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeedy, quite literally, doody. Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To, the story behind your story show. And I'm very, very excited to have a wonderful, I call her, well, she doesn't know this until I call her, Ms. Prolific Pants, Angie Belcher, who is a teacher of stand-up comedy, and she is a comedian herself. And you are extremely welcome to The Good Listening To podcast clearing, Angie Belcher.
The sound of one hand clapping. Definitely. Yes. Thanks, Chris. I have had quite a few of those in my life. Some of the most awful gigs I've had have been one person clapping. Thanks for having me on. I'm not too sure what I'm doing here and what I'm supposed to be. I'm a bit lost in the clearing. Is that okay to be lost in your clearing? Yes. That sounds really dirty.
I shall come and find you in the clearing momentarily. And also that lovely, as you say, the sound of one man clapping. We'll talk about stand-up comedy and your love and joy of it in a moment. But as I'm sure you've heard, there is an adage out there where no comedians truly made it until they walk off stage to what's called the comedian's anthem. Do you know what that is?
Comedian's anthem? Mm. No.
That is where it's gone down so badly that you walk off stage to the sound of your own footsteps.
Oh, right. So you can hear your own feet. Yes. I don't think I've ever had that experience.
No, and I'm not.
But I think the worst thing actually is people who come up to you and kind of go, "Duh," you know, this kind of, oh, there's a kind of start to the like, oh, bless, you know, kind of thing. I've had that before, like that. Oh, you tried really hard. It was really difficult, wasn't it? You know,
it is a baptism.
See, the pity is worse than the kind of vociferous anger. I could cope with someone going, "You're rubbish," you know what I mean? But someone who's like pitiful, that's probably the worst kind of gigs.
Yes, but if somebody throws a brick at your head, you know you've not gone down so well. But if they've just moved to complete and utter, then it's worse. And by the way, none of this is implying that neither of us have ever gone down that badly. But we've all been there because we are creatives, and you're very welcome. And why I particularly wanted to speak to you, Angie, is that you're being very prolific at the moment because you are, very interestingly, comedian in residence at Bristol University. And it's all about, and you'll get on the open road of telling us about this, about comedy on prescription and about how you're using stand-up comedy to help people in a variety of different medical situations, but helping to overcome trauma through comedy, which is a really interesting endeavour, if I may say.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. I've got a bit of a hectic brain, to be honest with you, at the moment. There's a lot in it, a lot going on. But yeah, I like to diversify or die, really. It's important to kind of have lots of stuff on the go. I have quite a hectic brain. And so if I don't feed it lots of stuff, I don't know, I start thinking too much, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, there is a lot going down at the moment. Yeah.
And in the wonderful sort of mayhem and, you know, cacophony of noise and distraction, here we are in the clearing, where I'm going to bounce you along the wonderful storytelling metaphors of the clearing itself, which I'll describe. Then I arrive with a tree in your clearing. We shake your tree. This is then the storytelling exercise, which is crunching on your juicy storytelling apples, madam, of 5-4-3-2-1, where you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention. There's a couple of random squirrels in there and some Shakespeare, and then finally a cake. I'll talk you through it. It takes about 45 minutes to do. And at the very end, you're going to be able to point us to where else we can find out about your wonderful comedy courses, Angie Belcher. And you're based in Bristol too, so you are a kindred spirit in that our geography is very similar. Do.
Great, we could have done this in real life, could we, Chris?
Actually in person, although, you know, doing it on my Zoom hole is how this normally works because of recording and then getting the film as well.
Okay.
And I noticed also, just finally, while I blow it, smoke, you were delighted on Facebook to say you've made it. I saw today you're in the New Statesman with your comic endeavour to do with the idea of comedy on prescription. But you said, hurrah, I've made it, because you were also in Free Malaysia Today.
Man, I didn't, you know, that's the pinnacle of my career. Now I've made it, really. And I've been in Brazilian newspapers this week, Spain, France. It's crazy, isn't it? I love how each one of them got it slightly wrong as well. So I thought it was just the Daily Mail that got it, you know, the Mirror that got it so kind of triumphantly wrong. But I love the fact in Europe they've all added their own stuff with that, because I haven't had conversations with these people. So it's interesting how people must kind of read the main BBC article, all my press release, and then just kind of go, and we'll just make up some stuff in the middle. And then they just kind of go, let's just stick something in to spice it up a bit.
And isn't that brilliant? Stand-up comedy at its best is making up some stuff in the middle, in any case. And obviously I come at comedy through a comedy improvisational lens. You're doing it from a stand-up lens. This is going to be a lovely conversation. And so it's Free Malaysia Today, The New Statesman, and today, please, Comedy Rule of Three, the Good Listening To podcast. I think you have made it. And the comedian in me is interested in Brazilian magazine that you mentioned. Is that a magazine about Brazilians, or is it based in Brazil?
I think it was based in Brazil, I think. I didn't read it. I'm getting to that point now. I'm not even reading my own media. That's how I didn't read much of it, to be honest. I just kind of noticed that it was all a bit wrong. And then I thought, I can't post that up today. I'm feeling a little bit like I've posted a bit too much about it, to be honest with you. So no. I might try and take a rest.
No, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And indeed, you know, I think, you know, this is a really lovely idea that I'd love you to tell me more about the idea of comedy on prescription. So I promise we'll do a deliberate riff on that in the middle of this as well.
Okay.
Okay, so welcome to the clearing. What is a clearing like for you, comedian Angie Belcher? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Well, every day I go and sit in my local park and I do the Guardian crossword. Can I mention the Guardian? We have mentioned all the other tabloids, and we mentioned the Guardian as well. And I do the crossword. And I suppose that is my moment where I kind of try not to think about anything else other than literally the questions that are in front of me.
I really like
the Guardian crossword, because I like it when they kind of, you have a question or an answer that kind of reminds you of something.
Yes.
Like, I suppose to some people a piece of music would, or, you know, it kind of, sometimes I get a feeling from the questions. It's really weird. And also I love reading I love scrolling down to the comments, because they're just the nicest, loveliest comments that you'll ever see on any board or any kind of social media thing. Like everywhere else, it's like the opposite of Twitter. You know, on Twitter, everyone's just really, really horrible. And,
yes.
Yeah, with the comedy on referral thing, you know, I had 16,000 retweets, with most of which were negative, because obviously the Mirror had said that I'm doing comedy, prescribing comedians, which I'm not. I'm prescribing the process of learning stand-up comedy. But the comment section on the Guardian crossword is just, it's just everyone just being so nice to each other. And I want to live in that world where everyone's just so lovely to each other.
Lovely.
I mean, probably completely a little bit unrealistic. But I'm in the park, and I try not for an hour to think about anything else other than the crossword. It's quite meditative.
And if I may say, that is an absolutely, nobody's ever done this before, given me a crossword to base the whole podcast in. So we're in a crosswords space where we're going to plot the coordinates through a crossword as we go through the rest of the clearing.
Okay.
So clearing, seven words, C-L-E-A, and so on. So I'm now going to arrive with a tree in your clearing, if I may, and then let's just make these clues to a crossword as we unpack the world of Angie Belcher. So a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, I'm going to arrive with a tree now, existentially, and shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. So first of all, you've had 5 minutes to have thought about, we'll go in order. What are four things, Angie Belcher, that have shaped you in terms of your journey to now, and what brings you to today? So what's shaped you?
I don't know. Yeah, I've had a very brief think about this. I think my first kind of ever encounter with kind of theatre, but not just any theatre, but theatre whereby you kind of it was in the round, and it was very kind of intimate, kind of involved theatre. I remember, come back to Shakespeare again, but Macbeth came to my school when I was about 11 years old, And it was one of those ones, it was in the round and the actors were right next to you. And I can remember the point at which, it must be Macbeth or someone, not, I can't remember which character it was, knocks a glass over and the glass bounced right next to me. And there was like a little bit of probably would have been blackcurrant juice that fell on the floor next to me. And it was, I could feel the, I could almost like smell the actors kind of thing.
Oh, how lovely.
And I think that that gave me a lifelong love of the how much the intimacy of theatre is so important. So recently I went to see Tim Minchin, who I love, and someone bought me a ticket to that. And it was a big arena show and I really enjoyed it. However, there's nothing as great for me as seeing a comedian really close up or seeing theatre really close up. And you kind of lose that. You know, I'd love to go to New York and I've never been to like, you know, a basement show there, but I've got a basement comedy club in Bristol called the Hidden Comedy Club, and it is that intimacy. And you'll never kind of be a millionaire running little tiny basement gigs because you can't get enough people in, but there's something about being that close. There's that point whereby my friend Pat calls it the point where you and the audience are breathing at the same time, you know, when you've kind of got them. And it's not just about the laughs per minute, it's about the they're totally with you. And I was there totally with that Macbeth theatre show when it came to my school. And because my family couldn't have afforded theatre, wouldn't even cross their mind to take me to a theatre show. It was a fact that it came to my school. And I was thinking I'd never seen anything like it. I was really excited by it. And I can remember that feeling very well.
Oh, and you mentioned there is that tension between, you know, losing the intimacy when you get into stadium arena shows. I completely get that. So there's intimacy in there. And you mentioned your basement comedy club called the Hidden Comedy Club. I have to ask, where is it? Because it's hidden.
It's at the Cloak and Dagger on Cheltenham Road.
You've got it all going on there. It's hidden and it's Cloak and Dagger. I love that.
Yeah, that's why I called it the Hidden Comedy Club. Yeah. So I have Aftermath there as well, which is my daytime comedy club. And then we have in the evening, we have like a general comedy club there.
You have a character foil called Odious Vex, don't you, as well?
Yeah.
And is that your emceeing character or is that your stand-up personification?
No, it's just another character I came up with. So I'm a poet as well as a stand-up. And I was intrigued by... When I went to headline at student shows, there was always this kind of archetype of young kind of, you know, political poet that talks about important things to them. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to create a character out of that? And when you write stand-up, you write stand-up that's very close to yourself because it's supposed to be you on stage. When you write a character act, it's good to have it diametrically completely different from who you are. So he has a very different energy to me. So as you can tell, I'm quite fast, I'm quite energetic, I'm quite like... But Odious Vex, who is like now a 19-year-old male rubbish poet, he's got a much slower energy and his body is he holds himself in a different way because he's kind of like young and the way that he holds himself because he's a boy as well, really. So yeah, he's a character act where I write really rubbish poetry for him, which I love doing.
I love that. So you use him as a sort of the mouthpiece through which you're able to reveal your crap poetry to the world. I love that.
I love it. I love writing crap poetry.
And then you can blame it on Odious Vex. I told you he was a crap poet. That's the whole shtick. I love that.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
The other thing would probably be visiting Uganda. When 10 years ago when I went freelance 2010, the same year I went to Uganda. And when I went to Uganda, I was a little bit broken, to be honest with you. I'd had a big accident. I'd broken my back. I'd thought I'd never walk again. I was in so much pain. It was a real, I'd been made redundant from my job, which is why I went freelance. And I went to Uganda thinking that, poor me, actually, and like how little I had. And I didn't have much money at the time. Just gone freelance, so I had no work in the diary. It was a bit of a scary place. I was in a lot of pain. A relationship had broken up, a long-term relationship. And I think I kind of felt in a, like, I didn't have a lot going for me. You know, I didn't have anything to give to the world, and that, well, you know, it's awful. But I went to Uganda, and I think I'd been to Thailand and I'd been to India, and they're quite touristy places compared to Uganda, which is still, yeah, was a third world country, no tourist industry, and kind of like anything goes, really, that, you know. And I went there and I realized what I had, and I promised myself when I saw, I'm patron of a charity out there called Youth with a Vision that gives training.
Youth for the Vision, did you say?
Youth with a Vision.
Youth with a Vision.
And so I went out there to work with the kids out there because I've been raising some money for them. And they give them an education, because education is, you have to pay for education in Uganda. So only people that can afford it can get educated. But also these children that were seen as the lucky ones are the ones that I think if they were in England, you'd have to report them to social services straight away. So these kids have got nothing. They've got shoes that are six sizes too big from their feet. They haven't eaten for days, and they're the lucky ones that can pay to go to school. And I just kind of realised how much, I know it kind of sounds, I don't want to sound like a white saviour, I don't at all. I just do what I can. But it made me realise I was a millionaire because I had a family. I had a house over my head. I had friends, and I lived in a society whereby if tomorrow I couldn't afford my rent, someone would give me a bit of money to help me. And if I couldn't, you know, if I didn't have any food to eat, the government would give me a bit of money to eat. And I'm not saying we live in a perfect world here either, yeah, but compared to the time I spend in Uganda, it made me realize that I have a lot and we have a lot. And I promised myself never to feel like that again, that I didn't have anything, when actually I think if we made the world an equal world tomorrow, they'd have to come around and take things off me. They wouldn't give me extra, they'd take things. If everyone was going to be completely on the same playing field, they would come and take things off me. And I need to, and remembering that, I think helped my mental health then.
That's such an extraordinary, obviously great levelling of perspective in there, but the extraordinary coincidence, Angie, is that I grew up in Uganda until I was 10 years old, between my being 2.5 and 10, and I lived in a place called Jinja, which is 50 miles away from Kampala. So I don't know quite where you went. Where did you go in Uganda?
It was Luganda. So it was a place, it was called, I can't remember the name of the actual place that I stayed. I will have to send it to you.
Sure, sure.
But Masaka really is the place that I mostly spent most of my time in the schools around Masaka.
Wow. I mean, what an extraordinary coincidence. And interestingly, about, I left 50 years ago, but I went back there almost as a ghost of my own past about 10 years ago when I was lucky enough to be doing a corporate job for Barclays in training and development. And I actually went from Kampala. I got a taxi to take me to where I grew up. And it was the most extraordinary, you know, humbling experience again. But I ended up in a swimming pool, not splosh, but I was walking in a completely dilapidated ancient ruin of a club that was called the Amber Court Club, where lots of the Europeans would hang out. But I was in an old dilapidated building site of just, you know, complete decay, standing in the swimming pool in which I learned to swim. So I was standing there with my taxi driver over off in the distance, sort of watching this English person going, wow, this is where I learned to swim. Anyway, so I have you've just sparked an extraordinary memory of Uganda for me as well.
But this wasn't in the city. I was in the village. So Masaka is quite away from Kampala, and it's in the middle of a village. It's kind of like in the rural areas whereby there was just families who had nothing. Also, HIV and AIDS had decimated these people.
Yeah.
People's parents had died, and these children and the teachers didn't have anything to eat. And just kind of a realization of, I worked out that I paid for that one of the schools I was teaching at. I paid for them to have lunch. And I worked out that I'd spent more on a pair of socks for my travels than it cost to feed a whole school.
Wow.
And I just kind of realised realising what I had. Yeah.
What a wonderful story. Lovely. Thank you. you're allowed two other things that have shaped you, if you like. This is so rich, by the way. We don't have to, it's not strict. You don't have to give me four. Or we can move on to three things that inspire you, if you like. Whatever you'd prefer.
I'd be able to talk about my mum, but I think I might cry.
That's okay. Do you want to talk about your mum?
Yeah, she died this year and she was a big part of my life.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Last year, so 6 months ago. And I think she shaped me in terms of my comedy. She never told a joke. She was just always the funniest person in the room. And she had a way of making people kind of feel okay about themselves by just being funny and just being, she was always the butt of the joke. She always made herself vulnerable. If she kind of like, I've never seen her embarrassed, I don't think. She didn't have any embarrassment about her. She would always kind of be prepared to make herself silly, to notice silly things in the room. And something that I've done with this comedy on referral course, so this is using the process of learning stand-up comedy to explore your trauma and make you more resilient in your mental health, I've come up with this thing called the inner comedian model. And I've realised it's kind of exactly how my mum brought me up, to kind of always bring play and joyfulness to situations and have fun. And it kind of sounds really like, well, just have fun, that will help your mental health. But I think in terms of this comedy mindfulness that I've been looking at, is that often we, as comedians, we subconsciously bring joy and playfulness. I do it all the time, you know what I mean, with Ulysses as well. When you have a child, so I've got a toddler who's coming up to four. If you do what they do in their life, you'll have a much nicer life. They don't care about other people. They just want to kind of breathe through life, take it as it gets there. You know, they see a puddle, they'll jump in it, you know. I'm having a bit of a teary moment, sorry.
No, not at all. So what a beautiful name, Ulysses, the classical name. I love that.
Yes, yeah.
And also
I think I was still off my head on the drugs for my C-section when I named him Chris. You know what I mean? I was like, what a name to give, you know?
It's a profoundly wonderful name to give, classical and also so profound that you're talking about comedy in trauma, but also you're accessing your own trauma to say, look, I know this has worked because this is what my mother did for me. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, and like I said, she never told a joke. She wasn't like someone who we kind of go, oh, got a great joke for you. She just was funny. She was, and I think she had no, she was like the opposite of a narcissist. I think she had no sense of herself. She just almost like a clown. And I was listening to your Tweety the Clown one the other day, and it kind of made me think about how some people are just clown-like in their, because being a comedian is giving. It's giving, saying, look, I'm going to make myself look silly and I'm going to bring this to the stage so that you don't feel so bad. And I think that's what she did, and that's what the inner comedian model does, yeah.
And if I may, that's obviously what you're doing too. It's by being a monumentally present the fool. And that doesn't mean twonk or, excuse my French, twat in being a fool. It's just the idea of being totally present to what's actually going on around you is what fooling
is
about.
And making everything okay for other people. That's what you're doing. You're making it okay for other people.
Which is incredibly generous in its disposition, which I completely get your comedy on prescription is. It's about helping people through trauma. How did you come about being comedian in residence at Bristol University? How did that happen?
Well, there was a load of academics who were doing a well-being and recreation project, and one of the girls who was on the program is someone I used to drink with in the pub years ago. So if you want to get to do funky things like that, you need to go to the pub and drink. So that was the connection. She was like, oh, because what it is, you could fundraise through the Brigstow project, which funds a lot of Bristol University stuff.
Through what artists project?
The Brigstow project, they're the people who do a lot of funding for Bristol University. And you could fund, if you're a group of academics looking at something, you could go to them for funding for an artist in residence.
Yeah.
And this woman said, oh, let's not get an artist in residence. Let's have a stand-up comedian, which is great.
And they just...
and it was a woman who kind of, I used to drink a lot in Tottenham, and she knew my work. And she's also one of these academics on this project. And that's all that's a really simple way of saying it. It's really nice sometimes when that happens, isn't it?
So a serious congratulations to you as well, though, because you are enjoying a lot of PR around this at the moment, and very deservedly so. I'm totally tuning into how deserved all the publicity you're getting around it is.
Because
you have such heart in what it is you're bringing, which is really clear.
Well, that's the important part at the moment. I'm having to turn down the one show in Channel 4 because they want to come into the group, and I'm saying, you can't. These are people who are traumatised that have had some really horrific things happen to them, who are very mentally ill. They're kind of a bit broken at the moment, and I can't bring a production company, as much as I would love to do all this stuff. Some of it I'm going to have to turn down, Chris, which in a way, kind of the media rabbit in me, what with media? It's quite excited by that, because obviously, do you know what I mean? Being a stand-up comedian, I love attention, Chris. I absolutely adore it. But I've got to put my participants first. And so I'm having to say no a lot, which is also a little bit empowering to tell, you know, Radio 4 and The Guardian, no. But
that is wonderfully discerning. I mean, there are some profound documentaries about, you know, life in prison. And if it's got to be the right voice rather than just headless chicken publicity, I think the idea of having the right fit to make a documentary, you know, much more richly about what it is you're describing, is the way, rather than just sort of going for the quick fix or the quick win of putting it onto show X or Y. I mean, all those shows are brilliant and have their own imperative, but I like the fact that you're being discerning and not just going and saying yes to everything.
I'm going to look at these people have to come first. That's why I'm doing it. I'm not actually doing this for them. I'm doing it for the participants, not the media. And so that they've got to come first in my thinking, really.
And by the way, there's a parallel in the teaching and the coaching that I do. Obviously, comedy improvisation is all about yes and, yes and, yes and. But that doesn't mean that you've got to say yes to everything. You've got to get really good at saying no to the right stuff. But that's still in a yes and mindscape. So this isn't just turning the world into a perfect utopia where everything's yes, 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 full, 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 twonk, twonk, twonk. You know, I love the fact you're being discerning in amongst it as well. So we're still there in your foliage, loving the journey so far. Let's talk about three things that inspire you. Your mum could have been one of those, or she could have been a shapeage. She could have been a bit of both. We don't have to talk about your mum anymore, but what else has inspired you or inspires you?
There's a really kind of important thing that happened to me when I was about six, seven years old. I say seven, in my class at school. And I think it was one of those moments that I didn't know then, but looking back must have been quite important, which is when Kenny Everett was on the telly. Do you remember the Kenny Everett show?
I do. In the best possible taste. Yes, I do remember.
Exactly. That's what I was going to talk about. So I was at school and we were all having turns in front of the class, you know, kind of if you wanted to come up and do something. And I got up in front of the class and I did that. I'm the best possible taste. I did that thing with the legs that Kenny's character used to do. And the whole class started laughing, like really loudly laughing. I can still remember that the raucous joy of it.
Getting your first laugh. I love that.
Yeah. And I can remember my teacher coming over to me because she said, do it again, Andy, do it again. I did it again. And it was even more laughter. And Mrs. Hackett, who was the teacher, comes over and she whispers in my ear. And she went, Angie, they're not laughing at you. They're laughing with you. We're all having fun together. And you've created this. Do it again. And it was just that she whispered in my ear. Like if it was like a film, do you know what I mean? That there'd be some like sort of rising crescendo music before that, you know, Angie Belcher then goes off and does stand-up. But then again, I didn't come to stand-up until much later in life. But I still remember that moment of getting the approval of the group.
And was it Miss Hackett? I love that.
Miss Hackett.
By the way, I really enjoy it when people, you know, remember to remember someone that said something to them that they've never forgotten. And I love that moment. My son had a moment just recently where a teacher of tennis, he overheard them say, gosh, isn't Stan getting good? And he's come home just so happy because, yes, he is getting good. And tennis has been the saviour of our pandemic. But I just love the fact, and I hope the teacher did it a little bit deliberately, because it's just really given him a nudge of confidence. And getting your first laugh, Angie, I just love that you remember that, thanks to Miss Hackett, confirming that they're not laughing at you, which is the joy of being a really true fool, where you're able to make things all right for others. I love that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
Continue. So now,
is
two
that
things.
Right, or?
Yeah. No. Two things that never fail to squirrels grab your attention. That's borrowed from the film Up, by the way. What are your monsters of distraction? Whatever else is going on for you. And by the way, I just need to remind us, we're still in the crossword puzzle here. How lovely. So your next clue or answer is to the clue of the question. What two things never fail to grab your attention?
Especially negative things, Chris.
Yes, why not? Life's not all a bed of roses and positivity.
I suppose it's kind of about, and it's probably changed over the years, but my need for approval and my fear of getting things wrong, I think I'm getting better at that. I think if we'd have done this show 10 years ago, it would have been, oh my God, I need to get things right, otherwise I will die and everyone will hate me. It'd be really hard. Whereas I think the joy of getting older is that you give less of a crap what other people think about you, as long as you know what you're doing is great. But it's, wouldn't it be great if you had that when we were at 21? Do you know what I mean? Like, I recently saw a picture of myself when I was 17, and you just want to hug them, don't you, and tell them it's all going to be okay, and just tell them how cool they are. You know what I mean? Like, look at me now, I'm just really boring and fat, and I just wear really boring clothes, and I look at the stuff I wore when I was 17, and I was like, she's so amazing, I just want to be her. Oh, I am her, but like older and fatter, and but I'm so much better than her in terms of my mental health now, because
yes,
like I said, you know, earlier with that Daily Mail and all those, and the Mirror getting, you know, misreporting the story and the nastiness and people slagging me off, I was like, bring it on, come around my house. Tell you what, it's old school, I come from a council house in the Midlands, come around my house and tell me what you think about me, yeah, to my face, you know what I mean, I kind of wanted to, yeah, come on.
And by the way, you're describing the deliciousness of wisdom and longevity, where you now think, I don't need to give such a crap. I love that. Brilliant. And also a beautiful, delicious segue, because we're coming on to later on when I give you a cake. We're going to talk about what notes or advice you might proffer to a younger version of yourself. So that's coming, you lovely thing.
All right. Oh, OK. I'll hold on to that then.
No, but you've sort of said it, but we can revisit that. So anything else? Yeah. So your one of your monsters of distraction is now knowing that you don't need to worry so much. That's lovely.
What else? And when we spoke about this before, but I use squirrels a lot in my training, not real ones, obviously. That would be cruel and not very cost effective. You can't train them. Mm. And they poo a lot. So when I work with people on their performance craft and their confidence about trying to, so you're, it's a bit like Patsy Rodenberg's circles of communication.
Yeah.
But there's a fourth for me. It's a fourth circle. Patsy Rodenberg is the person that taught Tony Blair to go education, education, education. She worked with Mandela. She's like a really big voice coach and whatever. And about how you read the room as well. So she says that on one level, you're giving it out. Then on other level, you're listening to what's happening in the room. And you can work on that, the level in between kind of thing, about kind of being able to talk and also know exactly what is happening in the room. And there's another one, which is about, for me, listening to also, or not listening to, dealing with the stuff that comes up from inside us, that tells us to get off the stage, that tells us we're no good. And I often say that mine is a bit like a squirrel that sits on my shoulder and goes, oh, you're not very good. Oh, yes, they're not liking you.
Your imposter syndrome is like the
inner critic or imposter syndrome. And for me, I've always talked about it being a squirrel. So it's really weird that you have a squirrel. So I suppose my squirrel tells me that I'm rubbish. But as I get older, I've found that I can overawe my squirrel. I can be bigger and better and cleverer than my squirrel, because my squirrel's is quite basic, really. It's just filled with fear and hatred, whereas Angie Belcher's got so much more going on in her toolbox, I suppose.
She has, Angie Belcher. And by the way, I adore your name. Angie Belcher's got more going on in her toolbox. And I love the fact you've tamed the beast of your inner squirrel. I love that. By the way, bizarrely, my son Stan, for some bizarre reason that we keep teasing him about, a few years ago, he really, really wanted a robotic squirrel. So go figure. So hopefully we'll be able to furnish him with that. And there was a time when he was going to go around to a neighbour who was quite good at carpentry to say, can I ask Dan to make him a robotic squirrel? We're going, yeah, you can give it a go. So I hope I can furnish Dan with a robotic squirrel at some point. But I love the fact your squirrel is your imposter syndrome and you're taming it. It's just
yeah, I think so. So. I don't know whether that's the right answer. I don't know. There isn't a right or wrong answer here, is there, Chris?
You're good in the clearing. You're doing really well. Now, a quirky or unusual fact about you, Angie Belcher, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
I had to write this down. In fact, I didn't know what the answer was until I came in the kitchen and realised I kill plants. You know, I've put one behind me to make it look like I am really good at plants, but I'm not. This one is a weird freak of nature. I think it's just learnt to stay in there, even though I'm abusing it. I torture it. I don't water it for ages, and then I panic water, drowning it. And they tend to die. I've had a lot of plants die on me.
And maybe it's a plant in that it's a plastic plant. Maybe that's why it's living.
No, I think that'd be funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, let's have a look at that. Is it plastic?
No, I think it's real. I think it's real because it has got bigger. But they don't meow, do they? So how do you know when you're supposed to? How do you know when you're supposed to water them if they don't meow and they don't say, "Can I have some crisps? Can 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 I have some crisps?" Like my toddler does.
Yeah, you're going wrong there if you're feeding them crisps. I think we've sussed it. I love that, by the way. And can you just say again, my name's Andy Belcher and I kill plants, please?
My name is Angie Belcher and I kill plants.
I hope this is very cathartic for you to fess that up so we all know. Brilliant. Okay, we've shaken your tree. That's us within the tree, within your crossword, shaking the foliage of your tree. Now we're going to move away from the tree, staying within your crossword clearing, and we're going to be talking about alchemy and gold now. When you're at purpose and in flow, Angie Belcher, what do you most enjoy doing or bringing to the world?
I think that I really love teaching. That the performance side for me now, I enjoy it, but not as much as I enjoy teaching and passing on my stuff, which I think we're coming off to the legacy thing really now, so I don't want to skip ahead really, but I really love seeing other people do well. And I lecture in stand-up comedy at Circa Media, and the cohort that have just come through, you know, they got some really big marks this year. And my boss there said that he was just astounded with how the quality of the stand-up. And I think I get more excited and more like, from the fact that I taught them that than I do from my own performance.
So by enabling others is what you're now really, really enjoying, enabling others to find their comedy voice. Yes.
And finding it hard. I'm not saying I always find it easy. I mean, with the students, it's one thing, but with this new thing of working with people in recovery, I can tell you, Chris, it's quite tough. You know, there's some tough stuff out there that they're dealing with and that obviously I have to deal with when I facilitate. But it's kind of what I feel my calling is.
I love that. That is what my calling is. Wonderful. Great. So now, I love that, by the way. I'm just letting that float there. I'm going to award you with a cake now for gracing us with your presence here in the Good Listening To Clearing, the story behind your story show. And the cake is a multi-layered metaphorical cake. So first of all, do you like cake, Angie Belcher?
I do like cake, but I'm not one of these people who's like cake, cake, cake. So I get pleasantly surprised when it's a really nice cake. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, I like cake, but
are you more crisps, really nice. crisps then, or is that just Ulysses? It's crisps.
You know, I like a nice jar of olives. That totally floats my boat.
I think
I'm more of a savoury girl, actually.
That sounds like you're more of a Waitrose girl there.
I'll take the cake off your hands if that's all you've got, Chris.
Well, you know, you can put some olives on the cake. I don't mind. So I will furnish you with a pot of olives. Do you like deli olives? Are we talking, you know, what type of olives do you like?
Deli olives, yeah. I'm a connoisseur. Really nice, fat, green, meaty ones, yeah.
Right. Okay, so this is your cake, so you can have it as an olive cake. Go for it. There's no consequence here. So the multi-layered cake is now your interpretation of the following questions. What's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future? And or what notes or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself? And or what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? And then finally, here comes the cheeky bit of Shakespeare. Inspired by Shakespeare's All the World's a Stage and All the Men and Women Merely Players. How, when all is said and done, Angie Belcher, would you most like to be remembered? So,
Hamlet's ghosts in the room, isn't it? I've got a quote that I've had hanging around my house for ages, and I think I bought it on one of my very first big poetry slams. It's at Cheltenham Festival of Literature, have a massive big poetry slam every year, and it's a really well attended event, and it's pretty kind of seen as the kind of like the person that wins that is the best kind of UK slam poet. So I remember buying it there, so I remember where I was when I bought it, and it's cards, and I think it's supposed to be one sentence, but I've always seen it as three separate things, which is, and I've written it down, which is chance favours an open mind. And I know sometimes you get the one that says chance favours a prepared mind. I think it's kind of a similar sort of thing, really. Because I've always seen it as one sentence. It means that, you know, you're more likely to create opportunity for yourself if you're ready. But I've also seen it as three separate things for getting on, really, which is number one is chance. Kind of remember that it's luck. But you've got to be in the world to create luck. No one's going to come round your house and knock on the door, really, and kind of go, hello, do you want to come and do this? But I mean, you've got to be out in the world. And then the second thing is favours. So favours on its own. So help each other. Do you know what I mean? Help other people. Other people help you. So I think favours are important. And obviously, an open mind. You never know what opportunity is going to come up. So for years, I used to have a branding company with my friend Paul. And obviously, my specialism was in presentations and how to write and perform for public speaking and lectures and stuff like that. And we always used to tell people, always be on guard for your brand. Always be on. You're always on. You never know who might be in the room. And we had this lovely story with this girl who'd been on our course, one of the ones who'd done at a university, and she'd gone off to do an interview for Google. She's gone off to America to have an interview, and she didn't get the job, and she was upset. And she's going, imagine going all that way and not getting the job. And they tell you there, and then, oh, you didn't get it. But then she was in the cafe afterwards having a bit of a sulk, and some guy came over to chat to her, and they got chatting, and she kind of decided to pull herself together and remembered that, you know, you always have to be thinking about your brand, especially when it's in a career and workplace. And it just happened that this guy's one of the big, big bosses, and he loved her so much after chatting to her, he created a job just for her. Oh. And it's a story that me and Paul used to tell people a lot, to kind of go, your brand and who you are and what you're about. You have to know what it is, and then always know when to pull it out, especially. And she did. She kind of thought, right, I'm going to pull this out right now. I remembered what Paul and Angie said. And so it's about kind of, I'm always on the hustle, basically, Chris. I'm always on the hustle. I'm always like, cool, what will today bring me? You know, what will today give me in terms of, you know, Angie Belcher, and always trying to be open to that. But you can only be open to it by having a smile on your face, talking to people and being in the world. And that's kind of similar to my inner comedian model, really, about being present, making connections and being there. Because if I bring my inner comedian in the world, I'm more likely to have a nice day, because I can bring my bullied teenager out, and she's not very nice. You know what I mean? She's a girl that got hurt a lot at school and bullied, which a lot of comedians apparently say that they were bullied as teenagers, because they were just like, you know, can you imagine? We were probably a bit annoying at school, to be honest with you. So I was, I don't want to bring her out too much, because she's really angry, and she ends up afterwards kind of feeling really sorry for herself, because she makes herself feel bad and other people feel bad. Whereas if you take your inner comedian out with you, you'll have a much nicer day.
Chance favours the brave. That's the most wonderful unpacking of the complexity and the texture of that quote. So thank you. I loved that. What notes or advice might you offer or proffer to a younger version of yourself?
Oh. But it's not. I often think sometimes, you know, that things are a bit too big for me, too much for me. And actually, when you do them, it's like, oh, so, God, why did I worry about that? Something my partner often says to me when I go out and I've got a big thing to do and I'm starting to worry about it is that he'll say, 3 hours' time, you're back here having your tea and kind of talking about it, and it will have gone. So don't spend all that time worrying. And I think I worried. I was very anxious. I'm quite anxious. And when I had my baby, I think my anxiety came back. I think when you've got anxiety and OCD in the family, which I have, when you, mostly things are okay and you can manage it. And then when something big and stressful or important or emotional happens in your life, suddenly you go back to like going back to your triggers and things. And so I can get quite anxious and worried about things. And so I often kind of think what my partner says, which is like, a couple of hours' time, you're back here having a cup of tea, and it would have gone. So don't spend your life worrying. So I'd say to my 17-year-old self, Don't spend your life worrying. Spend your life doing, making mistakes, getting it wrong. It doesn't matter.
And now, finally, when all the world's a stage and all the men and women are merely players, how, when all is said and done, would you most like to be remembered?
I think it's quite a simple one, really, and I've been thinking about legacy a lot. And the reason why I started Comedy on Referral, so, you know, using comedy in the community, was that I just want to help people. I want people to feel like they've been helped by me. I don't want to bring any harm. I want to feel like I've used my skills that I have garnered in my life, and that, you know, my privilege, and I've used it to help other people.
Beautiful. Where can we find out more about Angie Belcher on the old interweb, please?
And if you're interested in learning comedy, it's angiescomedycourses.com. And I can do that in real life or online. If you're interested in Aftermath, my daytime comedy club, that's aftermathcomedy.co.uk. And if you're interested in me as a performer, that's angiebelcher.wordpress.com.
Wonderful. And I know that your comedy intention in how you enable others, you say in one of your films I researched, you can go in 5 sessions from staring at a blank screen to making people laugh, which I think is a really lovely cut thrust and endeavour. As this has been your moment in the sunshine, Angie Belcher, is there anything else you'd like to say about having been here?
You know, it's been nice to kind of I've never done anything like this before, Chris. It's kind of weird, but I've enjoyed myself.
It's weird, but I've enjoyed myself. Wonderful. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to me, Chris Grimes, The Good Listening To Show. This has been the joy, the delight, and the adorable Angie Belcher. Thank you very much indeed. Do tune in next time for more stories from The Clearing. Thank you very much indeed. And do you want to say anything else?
Bye. Have a lovely day.
And good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.